I want to welcome you all here in this room, and then all of our campuses are linked together. And then we got all our brothers out in Lima. Say hi to our Lima, everybody. Here's what's amazing is that now they're all linked together, but there's all over the world right now, there's probably between 20 and 30,000 people that call Flatiron as their home. And so just thinking about that gets me excited about what I want to talk about today. So welcome to all of our campuses and all over the world. But we're in week three of this series we're calling Pieces, where we're contrasting two different words, whole and pieces. Those are very different words, especially if you were to apply them to your own life. Like if you were to describe your life as my life is whole, that can be translated this way: my life is complete, my life is lacking nothing, my life isn't missing anything. And if you were to describe your life like that, you go, that's a good life. Right, that would be a good life. And the word out of the Bible that we've been studying is the Hebrew word shalom, which can also be translated peace, all right? And again, if you were to describe your life with words like peace and complete and not missing anything, you would say, my life is going pretty well, all right? On the other hand, the word pieces, all right, especially if you were to apply that to your life, as in my life is in pieces, it would bring up different words, like my life is broken, or my life is missing something, or incomplete. That life just doesn't seem like it would be as good. And so the question is, first, how and what tends to cause all or like parts or pieces of a person's life to break and fall apart? And is it possible, and if it is possible, how is it possible? Is it possible for a person's life to move from pieces to peace? That's what we're trying to figure out in this series, all right? So what we covered last week, and I know that we have people that come and go to Flatirons and tune in, and maybe this is your first time here, so we're gonna do a little bit of catch up here. What we covered last week is that right or wrong, good or bad, your fault or somebody else's fault, everybody listen to my voice right now. We're sitting here right now with our own set of beliefs. We come in here with beliefs, with thoughts, with definitions. We have ideas about things. We have strategies on not just how to do life so far, but how, given what's happened in our life and what's happening right now, a lot of us are trying to figure out, what do I need to do from now on? And that's where we're gonna land here in just a few minutes, all right? What could I do that might lead to something better? Or is my life just kind of condemned to be more of the same? Could it be something better? So again, if you're new to Flatirons, here's what we do week after week in here is we call it two deals on the table, right? So what we do is we take a look at what we currently believe, what we want, what we feel, what we believe is true, what we're doing right now in our life. And we kind of put that on the table and we lay that beside what Jesus says he wants or he feels or he says is true or what he says he wants done. And then this is what we do our whole life. We'll look at the two and then we will pick up the deal that we believe has the best shot at getting us to a better life, right? Now, this is really, really important, okay? See, what we actually do reveals what we actually believe. I don't care what you tell me. I don't care how many Bible verses you read. I don't care how many church services or prayers you pray, okay? When you get up out of rooms like this, what you go do actually reveals what you believe. So that's what we're gonna do today. We're gonna look at these two deals on the table. So we've been looking at a question that was asked of Jesus. A man stopped him on the street and said, hey, Jesus, what's the greatest commandment to come from God that would lead to me or us, right, experiencing the best life possible? What did God say would lead to the best life possible? And Jesus doesn't miss a beat. He quotes probably one of the most famous verses in the Old Testament, and then he brings it into the New Testament. It's a commandment that came from God to a guy named Moses, to the people, and it was true back then, and it's still true today. It's very, very famous. If you have any, if you came from a Jewish heritage or you have friends from the Jewish heritage, you know what I'm talking about. It's called the Shema. It's the most famous prayer. Every Jewish person prays it in the morning, and they go to bed. They pray this at the same time. What's the most important thing, Jesus? And this is what Jesus said. He says, the most important one, answered Jesus, is this: Hear, O Israel, Shema Israel, all right? The Lord our God, the Lord is one. Now here's the commandment. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. The second is this, connected to it, love your neighbor as yourself. There is no commandment greater than these. So Jesus calls out here's the truth, all right? What all of us already know, all right? And we already believe that this is true. And here's what I mean by that. We all know and we believe that, you know, we have one life, but it is very complex, isn't it? We have one life, but it has a lot of many moving parts and pieces. And the key to experiencing, all right, and achieving the best life possible is when all the different many parts of our lives are connected. right? And the metaphor I've used the last several weeks is like a rock wall I built this summer. When everything's connected and touching and supporting one another, when everything's trying to do the same thing and go in the same direction, all right? Interacting and supporting one another, all those parts lead to something whole, all right? And what Jesus would say is that all these parts and pieces of our lives fall under one of four, like, you know, categories or quadrants of our life. And we talked about this last week. It's in this greatest commandment, but our life can be summed up in four different parts. First of all, we have our heart. Love the Lord your God with all your heart. And kind of the word that I described it is, your heart's your wanter, right? It's like the master control. Your heart runs the show. Our hearts are in charge of determining, and this is a really important phrase, we're gonna come back to it, what could be. What could be for me? What could be for us? And hopefully what could be is a good whole life. So the heart's trying to figure out, how do I have a good whole life? So it asks very, 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 very important questions. And we do this our entire life, consciously or unconsciously. The questions go like this. What is it that I really want for myself? What do I want out of life, all right? I want to be what? I want to have what? I want to know that I am and what? And so we're asking those questions our entire life. And so to answer those questions, we get advice from people or parts. We have messages and voices coming at us all the time. And then they come to us and then they tell our heart something, and then our heart goes, okay, this is what I'm gonna go with. And then we go out and live our life, all right? So who are those voices that are giving our hearts all these advice? So the first one is this. Our soul, love the Lord your God with all your soul. And this is what we talked about last week. Our soul's kind of our feeler. We're gonna talk about that all day today. Our soul advises the heart as to what will feel best, all right? So the feeler's going, you should do more of that because it feels good, and don't ever do that again because it hurts, all right? And then another, you know, like message to our hearts is this, is our mind, our thinker. Our mind advises the heart as to what's actually true. That's true, that's a life. You can trust that, I wouldn't even get near that. And then our strength, all right, that fourth quadrant of our life, takes commandments from the heart and says, okay, let's just get out of bed and go get stuff done. All right, so those are the four parts of your life. Now, here's what I call that last week, and it might have ruffled your feathers, but I still believe it. Whether you believe in God or not, that just makes sense. I mean, you think about it, right? Meaning this, whatever level you can get to, from a purely like basic psychology, biology, sociology, whatever that perspective is, you look at it and go, that's just true. If all the parts of my life are working in harmony and in agreement with one another and all trying to go in the same direction, that would be better than the alternative, a broken life, right? But what Jesus throws in here, because they ask him how to get to the best life, he says the best life possible, the abundant life, the full, you know, whole, complete life. In his very first talk ever, it's my favorite talk he ever gave in the Bible. It's called the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus described this life as the blessed life. And the Greek word is the makarios kind of life. It's the kind of life where you choose, and this is a really important word, where you choose to live every day of your life with God in God's kingdom. When God said, let there be you, this is what he was thinking about. I'd like to live life with you. It's the life you're created to live. And the way that you experience the best kind of life is when all the quadrants of your life, according to Jesus, your heart wanter, your soul feeler, your mind thinker, and your strength doer, they make a choice. I wanna make what God says that he wants and what he feels and what he says is true and what's done, that's gonna be my primary voice in my life. That's gonna be like the biggest influence in my life, which is what the command's all about. When the command references love God, that's what God's talking about. Love God with all the parts of your life, heart, soul, mind, strength. So Jesus says the best advisor that leads to the best possible life is a choice you have to make. Jesus calls it the most important commandment, but I just wanna be really, really clear. God can give you all the commandments, a Bible full of commandments. He won't make you do anything. You have to choose whether you're gonna align with that or not. So here's the greatest commandment in gym language. I choose, because it's my choice, nobody can make me do this. I choose to love God. Well, what's that mean? How do you love God? I choose to love God by prioritizing his wants, his feelings, his truths, and his actions to determine and guide my own, right? If I just let God be the biggest influence on all the parts of my life that are speaking to my heart, Jesus says that leads to the best possible life. But the problem comes is that when any one of those advisory parts of your life gets broken, that's what we're talking about today, or disconnected from the others and begins to advise the heart to want or believe or to feel or to do things that are very different than what God says is right or helpful or even true. So here's what I want to do. I want to look at how that happens and how it messes up, even not just messes up our lives, shatters our lives sometimes into pieces. Today, I want to look at the part of our life that Jesus referred to as your soul. And a lot of us have a lot of different definitions of soul, so really lean into this, okay? Love the Lord your God with all your heart was last week. Love the Lord your God with all of your soul is this week. And the Hebrew word, the Hebrew phrase for all your soul is uvkal nafshecha. Pretty impressive, all right, right? The Hebrew word that we translate soul is actually the Hebrew word nefesh. Everybody say nefesh. See, you speak Hebrew now. Don't you just feel spiritual? All right, but here's the weird thing about it. If you were to look up the word nefesh in a Hebrew dictionary, the definition would be throat. Love the Lord your God with all your throat, which sounds weird in English. Right? But if you remember, if you go back a couple thousand years to Hebrew and Greek and things like that, all of their words had pictures and stories and images that whenever you said that word, a whole idea came to mind. So think about this, all right? Love the Lord your God with all your throat. What goes in and out of your throat keeps you alive. Air, food, water. You're not going to live very long without air, food, or water. So nefesh, really, when the Hebrews heard the word nefesh, they thought, life. Love the Lord God with all your life. All right? So nefesh refers to my human beingness. That's philosophy right there, folks. That's right, all right? My human beingness, my personhood, my longings, my passions, all right? It's not just the spiritual part of me. The word for spirit's a different word than soul. All right, it's not just this mystical part inside of me that kind of animates me. It's not like the ghost in the machine that makes me move or something like that. I heard one teacher say it like this: you don't have a nefesh, you don't have a soul, you are one. Does that put in a little bit of a different light? You are one. It's your personhood. It's your uniqueness. It's you. It's your being. It's your value. It's your identity. And your nefesh, your soul, is trying to advise your heart all day long. This is what the soul is trying to tell my heart. Jim, this is who you are. And this is what you're worth. And this is how and where you do and don't fit in with in the world and with other nefeshes around you. All the time, I'm trying to figure out those big questions in my life. Who am I? What am I worth? And where do I fit with you and in the world? And then based on that perception and how I answer those questions, all right, how I feel is the response to that. My emotions come out of how I answer those questions. My ability to love, to interact with other people, to connect with other souls, to the hopes and dreams and wishes for my life, the things that I long for are all emotions that flow out of that, out of this identity. Like, how do you perceive yourself? How do you perceive your position in the world? How do you perceive your value to yourself, to others, and to God? Because out of how you answer that, here comes all your emotions. Does that make sense? So here's a simple way to kind of explain that, or a simpler way. So this is all a lot of head knowledge, and then we're gonna get into this is what it looks like in real life. So stay tuned, okay? So if you come to Flatirons very long, you're gonna hear Ben or I or some teacher up here, we make a lot of references, we go on these retreats, all right? Men's retreats, women's retreats, all that kind of stuff. And then the other thing that we do around here a lot is that we all try to get in a group. All right, and here's why groups are so important, all right? We learn in rows, that's what's going on right now, wherever you are listening to my voice right now. We learn a lot of information in rows, but we have to get in a circle of people and go, what do I do with that? How do I make sense out of that? How do I apply that to my life? Does anybody else struggle with that? So we learn in rows, but we grow in circles. But if you spend any time going to one of those retreats or spend some time in circles, we have this discipline around here that we call soul work. We work on our souls because they get all screwed up and they need some work. So we're trying to do our work. And as part of our soul work, here's what we've learned over the last several years is that we can take all of our emotions and basically they all kind of fit into six main categories. Now, one of those categories, you might have a lot of emotion or a little emotion, but it's still under that category, all right? So they all fit within the six categories, all right? So there you go. So when you feel something, all right, when you feel an emotion, it's linked to how you answer those questions. Think about this, all right? So like when you get sad, your nefesh, your soul, feels that it's lost something or grieved something. I want you to think about a time when you've been sad. It might have been somebody died. It might have been a dream died. It might have been something that you hoped for isn't gonna happen anymore and you're sad about it. It makes sense. But when you're angry, angry means your nefes feels like they want something, but it can't have it, right? You look at it going, I want that to happen. I want her in my life. I want him. I want this, right? And you can't have it and you get angry. Or when you get scared, your nefes feels threatened. It's trying to perceive the world and going, I don't know what's happening, but it feels like something in the world's gonna hurt me and it scares me. Or happy, your soul feels peaceful and content. It's a sense of well-being, or you're excited. Your nefesh feels hopeful. Something good's about to come my way, and I'm really excited about it. And here's the other one, tender. This is the sixth emotion. Your nefesh feels connected to another person. I have empathy with another person. I have compassion, I have love for somebody, and I feel really tender, really tender-hearted towards that. Now hang on to those, all right? We'll come back to them. So something happens in your life, and then you try to read it, and it brings up an emotional response. Your nefesh then kind of informs your mind, this is how it feels, and then your mind goes, well, if it feels like that, this is what must be true, and then it says something to the heart, and then the heart sends out an order to your body, go do something about that, right? Now, here's where it gets tricky. If the emotional response is healthy and is perceiving the situation in a whole way, in a way that agrees with God, then what comes out of you is healthy and whole and agrees with God. Wouldn't that be great? But that's not what I do most of the time. Why? I have a broken nefesh. I have a broken soul, right? And I'm not reading the situation right. So if we read the situation wrong, maybe the emotional response that comes out of us is like way over the top, like way, way, way too much. It like overreacts. Why? Sometimes if something will happen, I'll go, I have to feel more than I do. I feel way too much. I want to feel more of that, whatever that is. And in order to feel more than I currently do, I'll do whatever I have to do and I'll get addicted. For those of us who struggle with addiction, I need that. Now I need a little bit more of that. Now I need a little bit more of that and a little bit more of that. Now it owns me. Right? Or codependency. I met someone. I want to be with them. I want to be more with them. I want to watch them. I want to stalk them, whatever that is, right? And it's like, I'm codependent on them. I need more, 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 more because my soul's broken. So I might over-respond. Or how about this, the other way of this? Something happens in your life and you go, I don't ever want to feel that ever, 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 ever again. Ever had that happen? And so you shut down. You're real stoic. What's wrong? Nothing. How are you? Fine. Right, you're cold, you're guarded, you're emotionless. And here's the other thing, and sometimes that can lead to addiction. On the first one, you get addicted because you just want to feel it all the time. And this one, you get addicted because you don't want to feel anything, right? To quote the great philosopher Pink Floyd, I just want to be comfortably numb, right? It's how we live our lives. That's hard enough. Here's the other thing that really tends to screw up our lives. Something happens in your life and it makes sense to respond in a certain way when something happened years ago or even decades ago, all right? It makes sense. Here's the tricky part. When something happens now and your soul perceives that what's happening now is similar to what happened earlier, it kind of looks at that and goes, this kind of feels the same as that. And it can bring up a bunch of stuff, right? And here's the thing I found is that different things can trigger now what happened back then. Like I've been triggered by a word. I've heard somebody say something. People look a certain way. I've been in a certain circumstance and it feels like that one. I've been triggered by smells, songs. I've been triggered by wallpaper. I walked into a room going, same wallpaper, run, all right? And it's like, it just brings back a whole bunch of stuff. So here's the thing is, all right? It's triggers consciously or unconsciously. Let me say it this way. Memories can trigger way more response now than now deserves. You ever had that happen? I have, for a lot of different reasons. Like you look back, maybe because back then when something happened to you, when someone made you feel like that, you were a little kid, you couldn't do anything about it. By golly, you can now. Nobody's gonna do that to me, and so you just explode all over them. Or how about this? This feels the same as back then, and I don't know what to do, so I'm gonna do exactly the same thing I did back then, because it's all I know. It's muscle memory, right? And it kept me alive back then. Maybe it'll keep me alive now. I'm just gonna do more of that, which is why a lot of us are trapped in really codependent, unhealthy, abusive relationships. That's all we know, right? So you could explode or you could shut down. Now, here's why Jesus is saying this is so important. To make sure that all the parts of our lives are looking to what God says is true rather than what our emotions feel right now or perceive to be true. Because if we're not constantly laying what we feel beside what Jesus says is true, we run the risk of not just screwing up our own lives, but all the lives of all those people around us. And we're gonna get to this in a few weeks, our neighbors, but you know what? I don't wanna talk about love my neighbor right now. You know what I wanna talk about? My closest neighbor, the people related to me, the people I love the most in this world, my family. My brokenness keeps on falling out on them, all right? And it's not because we mean to. None of us wanna hurt our family. None of us got up this morning and said, I'm gonna try to hurt my family today. None of us did that, all right? But it's happening all the time. Why is that? So here's what I wanna do. I wanna take this out of the hypothetical, you know, we're just learning knowledge, stuff like that. I wanna give some examples from my own experience. This is what it looks like in real life, all right? So, and this, it's emotional for me. I mean, I'm talking about soul work here. And last night when I went through this, I had to stop a couple times because it's just hard. But it's what we do here at Flatirons, right? Cry a lot. So 8 years ago last week, my dad passed away and went to heaven. And I miss him. I had a good dad. My dad taught me a lot of great things. He taught me about Jesus. He baptized me when I was 8 years old. He taught me about art. He taught me about beauty. Tried to teach me about music, be a horrible singer. But he was a pastor. He taught me about ministry. I learned to roller skate in the church basement. I mean, I spent a lot of time at church. He taught me about the outdoors. He loved working on the outdoors, and I did too. The whole time I was living at my mom and dad's house, I don't remember my dad ever missing one of my football games or track meet. He was always there no matter what. He was at all my band concerts, all my plays, all that, all right? He was a good dad. He was a horrible disciplinarian though. He didn't know how. See, the only form of discipline that my dad had ever witnessed or experienced in his own life is that if he did something bad or his dad thought he did something bad, discipline was you got the crap beat out of you with a fist or a boot or a horsewhip in his case, all right? And he knew this, I do not want to do that to my son. So whenever I misbehaved, hypothetically, or when I was rebellious and I needed a strong influence in my life, this is what happened in my life. In my house the whole time I was growing up. I do something wrong and my dad would get mad and yell at me, and then it was like a switch flipped and he would shut down. Physically, he'd shut down. He'd go silent. He'd go sit in a chair for about an hour and stare. I never got disciplined as a kid. So it explains a lot, doesn't it? I never got grounded. I never got spanked. I never got restricted. I did whatever I wanted because my dad was in a chair. Why? Because my dad's soul was broken. My dad was trying to do something better for me than what he felt as a kid. And that's a good thing, right? That is a very good thing, all right? But here's how that fell on me, unintentionally. But here's the message my soul took on in a time of my life where I was trying to figure out who I was, what worth I had, and what my place is in the world as a boy who wanted to become a man. And I knew that I wanted to be a strong man, so I went looking for strength, and my dad was in a chair, so I went looking for strength in all the wrong places with all the wrong people, and I got hurt. Right? You have your version of this, don't you? Right? You got hurt, all right? Now listen, I'm not blaming my dad. My dad was trying to do something good, not hurt me, all right? It just came out wrong. He was passive. I was looking for something good, someone or something to tell me that I was good enough, I was strong enough, and that I could be a man in today's world. I just looked in the wrong place, and I ended up getting hurt, and I felt weak and powerless and a failure, which left me with a lot of tapes playing in my head, a lot of messages in my soul of fear and shame and insecurity. My soul continually began to feed my heart and my mind the message, Jim, whatever you have to do, protect yourself. Don't put yourself in any situation where you might feel weak or helpless. So whenever I run into any situation where I don't know what to do and I don't know how to fix this, this is what I do. I either panic and try harder, which will land you on sabbatical, by the way, all right? which is exactly what happened, all right? But here's my MO. Here's what I do most of the time, all right? I'll just dump you. Bye. I will just dump you and I'll go do something else that I know that I can win at. Because I got to win. Because this doesn't feel good. Rob and I have shared our story before, but if you're new around here, so my wife Robin has struggled with bipolar disorder all of her life, and then that really came online after we got married, probably because of me. But then she's had a long history of migraine headaches, and I don't know how to fix that. Do you? Yeah, I've tried, all right, and I don't know how to fix it. So I come in the house at the end of a day of work, and I walk in, and everything around me just said, "You're losing, you're losing, you're losing, you're losing, you're losing." All right, so I didn't know what to do, but I did know this: I'm really good at running churches, right? And so I ran away from home, which felt like I was failing, and I ran to church. I know my biggest fail. If you were to back me in the corner and go, "What's your biggest fail as a husband and father?" I know the day. I know the day is when Robin, so bipolar is you get really, really high or you get really, really low. And this was the season where Robin was really, really, really low, like in the bed with covers over her head for weeks. And then she had these migraines. Sometimes the migraines would get so bad, she would actually hit her head against the wall because it felt better than just the pain, all right? And I ran away from home. I left Robin depressed and with migraines and two small children. And I walked out the door with her voice yelling behind me, "Please don't leave, please don't leave." And I went on a 3-week mission trip with my church. So proud, right? And I went to India and Kenya. I baptized some people. I don't remember their name. I preached. I don't remember what I preached. I met some people. I did some things where I don't remember much of any of it. But when I got home, I got a raise. I won. Does this connect with anybody else? I've never had an affair with a person, with a human being, all right? I've had multiple affairs with my job and my career and my hobbies because they tell me I'm good. Do you see where I'm going here? And this is really important. Do you see the unintentional, I didn't mean to do that, the unintentional fallout of not addressing the broken parts of our soul? Some people, you know, would look at this and go, that explains this thing called generational sin. Meaning this is that the sins or the brokenness of the parents falls on the children. Not because you mean to, it just happens. I don't know the story here. I'm sure that my grandpa was an alcoholic and a broken, angry person for a reason. Somebody else's brokenness fell on him and it broke his soul. And then his brokenness fell on my dad and it broke my dad's soul, who did the best he could. But I remember about 10 years ago, I was driving my dad out to the airport. And we were having a conversation around his dad, and he said, "Jim, I've always felt like a failure as a minister, as a pastor." And I went, "Why?" He says, "Because I stand in front of people all the time, and I teach we have to forgive our enemies, and I've never forgiven my dad for what he did to me. And I feel like I'm a failure." And I looked over and went, that's what makes you a good pastor. This is what Me Too means. Right, this means that you understand that forgiveness is not an event. I prayed a prayer, and it was all over. It's a journey. But he never resolved that in his own heart, all right? And so he wrestled with that all of his life, and then his brokenness fell on me, and I took on a message about my identity and my worth and my place in the world, and it was broken, and it went undressed and unhealed, and that fell on Robin and fell on my kids. And this is where we're gonna get kind of raw and real. See, here's what I mean by that. Like, write this down. We cannot go back and change our past. That verse does not exist, all right? We can't change our past life, what we've done, who we've wounded, or the wounds that have landed on us, all right? But we do have a choice to rethink what is actually true now and what can be different from now on, right? This should be your screensaver because we probably need to remember this every day. We can't change the past. All we have is from now on. That's all we have. From this point on. And that sounds good, but it's scary as any heck, right? I mean, it's really, really scary because I don't want to look at the broken parts of my life, especially when I might have to admit my brokenness fell on some people that I love a lot and it broke them. And I have some responsibility for that. But I also have a lot of responsibility about from now on to make the future better. So how do you do that? You gotta look at your brokenness and how it's affected the people in your life. So I have a saying around here I use a lot. Leaders go first, right? So I'll go first. So I'm gonna bring my son Jordan up here. And we're gonna talk about how generational brokenness has landed on him. So will you welcome, this is my son Jordan. Will you welcome him?
Hey. Published author. So impressive. Anyway, so Jordan's on staff here at Flatirons. And Jordan, you lead not just men's soul work here at Flatirons, but you're leading men all over the country over the last several years. So, but it all started with You kind of say, I got to look at some stuff. And you stepping out to go find out what was going on in your own soul, right? And so here's what I want you to talk about those first steps. What was going on? What were you wrestling with? What was the message you took on, right or wrong? And how was it kind of falling out on Leah and the kids? And
yeah, kind of what I figured out about myself was that I began, well, just from growing up and from with mom and with you and everything going on, like, you guys would always say you love me. You're very good about verbally showing love for me, but I never actually believed it. So I grew up with this idea that, yeah, people may say they love me, but actions speak louder than words. So I didn't actually believe you meant it. So I just developed this belief that I was unworthy of love. And then that no matter what I did to try to fix you guys or anything, I was unable to. So I started to believe that I was incapable of loving at the same time. So growing up, I would try to find affirmation and love from others in various ways. And after those ultimately failed over and over, I just kind of retreated back into myself, shut down all my emotions, shut down all my vulnerability, just to protect myself from this perceived rejection I was feeling over and over again. And obviously that hit my marriage really hard. It's hard to be married to somebody if you're not even willing to talk about anything going on.
Write that down.
Few years into my marriage, I'm just this emotionless kind of just robot in the house, not connecting with my wife at all, not connecting with her emotions because I didn't even understand what emotions were. So yeah, it felt really hard.
So the message was I'm not worth loving, and I can't make anybody love me, and even if they tell me they love me, it's probably not true.
Yeah.
All right, so you went to work. Something triggered you to say, I want to go find a better truth or a better message, and you started work on that. So what message now is running your life, and how's that affecting your life?
I mean, it took a lot of work, but where I've gotten to and dealing with worthiness and feeling worthy of love, I mean, that is a constant struggle in my life. But I keep continuing to battle it with just the fact that I am worthy of love. I have great attributes that God sees in me, my wife sees in me, my friends and family see in me, and I'm finally starting to believe that I am worthy of love.
Yeah. So, we're talking about, you work with a lot with men, and we talk about men's work and all that, but we have all the women's soul work here going on at Flatirons too, and there's a lot of correlation. What we have in common is that something happens in our life, and it kind of falls on us, or we perceive it, right or wrong, it defines us, and we take on a message. Right? So you've worked with hundreds of men, but hundreds of people, I think this is probably applied to. Is there a common message that's running in a lot of our heads, right? And where does that come from?
Yeah, there are definitely common themes that go throughout it. And most of it revolves around the question of if you're enough, if you have what it takes to be loved, to love. With the soul in particular, it revolves around that love connection part. Do people love me? Am I lovable? Do I deserve affection, affirmation, and ultimately, can I love people at the same time? And I think that comes from a very similar place as mine, with parents, friends, grandparents, teachers, siblings, like people that should have loved you at a very vulnerable age as a child, especially, and they either didn't or couldn't love you the way that you needed to be loved at that time in your life.
And some of it, I'd say most of it's unintentional. I remember the first time you and I talked about what you were learning about all of this, and we were driving in the truck, and you actually brought up stuff like that you were unpacking that mom and I had kind of landed on you. And my first response was, I'm so sorry. And then you stopped me right in the middle of it, and probably one of the most helpful, this is not about blame. You looked at me and went, Dad, you did the best you could. And you kind of let me off the map. You weren't blaming me. But unintentionally, I sent out a message and you took it on, right? And so where do we start? Because I think a lot of us are probably listening to this conversation right now going, yeah, I feel like that all the time. Where would a person actually start to identify what untrue messages kind of run in my life and keeping me from this better life. And then what could they start doing maybe to take on a better message that would agree with God? Like, tell us your path, or tell us what maybe some ideas.
Yeah, with me, it started with I had to get a different perspective on my life. I was very in my own head all the time, not believing that I was lovable, not believing that people love me or believing what they say. So I had to kind of step out of my situation and get a different perspective. I did that through a Crucible weekend. But there's plenty of ways to do that. And really, it's really hard to do it on your own. So you have to find that group of people or a counselor or a weekend like that that you trust, which was extremely hard for me because my whole thing was I just didn't believe the good things people said about me. It took more than hearing a new message. I had to really experience a new message, which looked a lot like loving myself and figuring out new ways to see myself, finding that broken part of my soul that was still this little boy who was alone and scared and isolated as a kid, and seeing him for who he was back then and loving him, accepting him, because he's still in there trying to find affirmation, and giving him that, giving myself that ultimately was how I experienced. And doing that from looking at myself from a different perspective, mainly the perspective of God, is what really helped me get there.
Yeah. And one of the things you said last night is it's ongoing. It's a journey, right? It's not like I face it, now I have a new truth, and I don't ever have to deal with that again. It keeps coming back, right?
Oh, constantly. Yeah.
And what I love, too, is that you're taking what God's been teaching you, and you're using it to help other people. So Jordan has a book out, and I'm going to be his dad right now and go, it's awesome. And it's a great Valentine's present, too, because the clock's ticking. Anyway, but this book is, it deals with a lot of, you worked with like 15 guys for 2 years, young 20-somethings who either were just married or want to get married someday. And a lot of us as men, we bring a lot of that broken soul into our marriages, and it falls on people. And so you're not just trying to fix yourself, you're trying to help us, right? Yeah. I wrote the foreword for this, and I mentioned it when I came back from sabbatical. I read this book, and he became my pastor, not just my son. I highly recommend it. It's out in the lobbies, and it's online for all you people around the world listening right now. But give me you had an untrue statement running your life. So we always end these retreats with a positive one. So what's the I am statement about you?
I am worthy of love, and I'm a good husband and father.
I agree. Give it up for Jordo. Thanks, buddy. Yeah. Here's how I want to end this, okay? The heart is asking, get your phones ready because you're going to take a picture. Go ahead and get them right now. All right. Your heart's asking those questions all the time to determine what do I need to do to have a good, whole, full life. Here are the questions, all right? And we do this unconsciously most of the time, but it's a tape running in our head all the time. What do I really want for myself? What do I want to be? What do I really want to have? And what do I really want to know is true about me? Now, I want you to look at that. And maybe if you take a picture of it, you'll remember it all week long, all right? So here's what I want to do. I want you to look at it, stare at it, whatever that is. Or when one of them jumps out at you, something like that, which one of those brings up emotion for you? All right? And we're just going to park here for a minute, all right? As you look through that, how about sad? Does anybody feel sad when they look at that? Because it's like you're looking at that going, I can't have it. It's loss and it's grieving. Sadness is a natural response to loss. Something happened, good or bad or whatever, and you don't have it anymore. But let me ask you this. Is sadness now defining your life? Is that what you want? Or angry? You read some of these questions right here and you get angry. Yeah, I know what I want and I want to have, and I know what's true, right? But nobody will let me have it, and you're angry, right? Let me just clear something up for Christians. It's not a sin to be angry. I can show you Bible verses that say, be angry. Don't sin when you get angry, but it's okay to be angry. There's stuff in the world that you ought to be angry about. But sometimes when our soul gets broken, anger kind of goes over and it becomes bitterness and hatred and it owns us. Is that happening here with you? Scared, right? Your soul is threatened. You look at something going, that just scares me to even think about that. Let me say this. Fear gets a bad rap. Fear is a good thing sometimes, all right? So is guilt. We all say guilt's horrible. I don't know, all right? Because both fear and guilt alert you that something bad might happen and it hurt you, so you might need to change something, all right? But fear and guilt are only meant to get our attention so that something can change. They aren't meant to be carried around. Here's the best example I have. Pain is a good thing,
right? And here's what I mean. If you don't feel pain, all right, I put my hand on the stove and it hurts, so that I'll take my hand off the stove, all right? Pain and shame and guilt, we're meant to get our attention so something can change. We're not meant to carry it around. Are you carrying it around? Happy, your soul is happy. You look at that and go, I'm really, really happy about my life, all right? Everybody wants to be happy. That's awesome. Here's my question about happiness. What is it? What are the things that you are telling yourself that you have to have or be or do in order to be happy? And some of you already have them. Are you happy? How's it working for you? It's great. Keep on doing it. It's great. I'm excited. I read some of that. I get really, really excited. I'm anticipating really, really good things. Again, everybody wants to have hope, all right? What are you putting your hope in? What are you putting your hope in? If this happens or that happens or if I get this or whatever that is, everything will be okay. And does that hope line up with what God says? And what happens if it doesn't happen to your hope? And is there maybe something better you might want to think about putting your hope in rather than this thing, all right? And tender. This is what's going to really... Get serious. You look at that going, I just want to be connected to somebody. I just want to be, I want to love somebody. I want to have somebody in my life. I don't want to feel compassion. Listen, compassion is a good thing. It's one of the number one things that describe Jesus. So being a compassionate person is a really good thing. Broken compassion. Do you feel like you have to carry everybody else's pain? You have to take it on yourself? Do you feel like you have to be everybody's hero? / do you feel like you have to save everybody in your life? Because that's a lot of pressure. Just think about it. See how important the soul is to living and experience a full life, and what can unintentionally happen to ourselves and the people that we care about the most if we don't have the courage to take a look at what is broken. So we have a saying in soul work that goes like this. You got to keep it out in front of you. Right? You got to keep that broken part of your soul out in front of you. I'm angry, I'm sad, and here's why. I'm codependent, I'm addicted, I have it out in front of me, and here's why. I know it's part of my life, I acknowledge it, I'm not gonna try to ignore it, like it doesn't. It's not true, it just gives it more power, all right? But I'm looking at you right now and going, you're a lie, and you don't agree with what God says is true about me, and I need to make a decision right now. And here's what I want you to walk out of here. You have to choose to do something different in spite of how you feel. And this is the only room you'll probably hear that all week long, because every other room's gonna say, go with how you feel. You have to choose to do something different in spite of how you feel. And that's easier said than done. And we're gonna spend the whole talk next week talking about that. How do I choose to hold on to something that is true rather than let my broken emotions run my life? So I'm gonna close the service different than I think we ever have before. I was standing up here last night and I got an idea. And I said, I'm gonna do something we've never done. And all the tech people like, buckle up, we don't know what he's doing. All right, so first of all, here's what I want you to think about. So a broken heart, we look at it and go, a broken heart's bad. Not necessarily. Because sometimes pain gets your attention. And sometimes God has to allow our hearts to get broken before we pay attention to what's really, really going on. As a matter of fact, in the Bible, a broken heart is the one thing that God will never deny. He'll never reject a broken heart. Sadness. Sadness is it's sad. I mean, it's like I'm grieving, all right? But what do you do with sadness? Some of us don't know what to do with our sadness. Jesus says, bring me all your sadness. In his very first talk ever, he says, blessed. Makarios, you can still have a good life even if you mourn. Why? Bring it to me in my kingdom and I'll get you through the funeral of whatever has died in your life. Bring him your pain. So here's the last one though. So I'm not gonna get into specifics. I'm gonna make a really broad statement. I have sinned a lot. Anybody else? Me and four people down here. Oh, y'all, yeah, all right. Here's what I know about my sin. I put my faith in Jesus Christ and what he did on a cross and that he rose from the dead, and I am forgiven. He's my Lord and Savior. If I die tonight, I am going to heaven. I don't have any fear of that. Not one. I'm forgiven. 1 John 1:9 says, if we confess our sins to him, he's faithful and just and will forgive everything. I'm forgiven. I found a verse a few years ago that's different than that though. It's found over in the book of James, this little book toward the end of the Bible. It says this, confess your sins to one another so that you will be healed. I'm forgiven. I'm just not healed. Anybody else? And I want to be healed. I think that's the key to a better life. So where do you do that? It starts with coming to Jesus and then maybe circling up with some people. So here's the risky thing I tried last night. It went okay. It's a risk. So at all of our campuses or in your living rooms around the world, if you're at Lyman right now, here's what I want you to do. If anything I've said today has landed on part of your life, would you be willing to stand up so we could just pray for you? Anybody? Wasn't that scary? But what if I'm the only one? This is what we all thought. Look around the room, whatever room you're in. It's a painful world, isn't it? And it breaks us. So we're gonna bring that to the only person that might be able to fix or heal or bring it back together, okay? So let's just do that and we'll sing a song and we'll go home. So God, we are a mess and we are desperate for something better in this world, and we just don't know. We're doing the best that we can. We got a bunch of stuff that fell on us. We feel really guilty and shameful about the stuff that we've dumped on other people. So it's something's got to change in our life. And so we're making a decision right now to look to you, go, do you have something better that you could kind of send in our direction? Because if you would be willing, God, to forgive all our shortcomings and all of our mistakes and all of our, all those moments that we wish we could get back, if you would be willing to forgive that, that would be like proof that you really love us. And if you loved us that much, then I think I might be willing to love you with a little bit more of my heart and my soul and my mind and my strength. If you could pull my life back together, God, I think I speak for a lot of people standing. If you could forgive me and heal me, you could have me my whole life. And I'm not strong enough to do that on my own, so I need you, Jesus. Will you come to all of us right now and pull us back together into one whole peaceful life? It is in Jesus' name I pray. Amen.